Andy Connell Show is sponsored by Bell and Pollock Accident and Injury Lawyers.
Now, it's Mandy Connell on KOA News Radio, the voice of Colorado.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to a Monday edition of the show. Should have probably cleared my throat before I started. I'm your host for the next 3 hours, Mandy Connell. Dave, the intrepid producer, is with us, and Michael Coover, pushing the buttons, making us sound smart. We are going to be talking to Big Al and JoJo. They're downtown as they gear up for tonight's home run derby this past weekend. I just got back from have you ever been to Wisconsin, Dave?
No, I haven't.
So I have not spent any time in Wisconsin. We went to visit a friend in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, Father Mike. I think I'm going to have Father Mike on the show. I'm already going to have Grant interview him for the Taking It For Granted podcast because he's just an extraordinary human being. But what do you think about an hour of God talk every once in a while, Dave? If anybody can answer your questions, it would be Father Mike. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll see. But went to Milwaukee. First of all, we're walking around. We kind of tootled around downtown Milwaukee yesterday in the afternoon. And I was like, man, these people love the Bucks. Everybody's wearing Bucks shirts. I had no idea the Bucks were in the finals. That's how much I pay attention to NBA basketball and that the game was in Milwaukee yesterday. I had no clue. I was like, man,
did
they
you
love
have a lot
their
of
basketball
beer?
Team. No, I did not, actually.
Don't they have a lot of beer in Milwaukee?
They do have a lot of beer in there. But, you know, Chuck is not a beer guy at all. He's allergic to all of the ingredients in beer. He's allergic to malt, hops, barley. He's allergic to all of it. So he's not a beer guy. When we first started dating years and years and years ago, feels like a century ago, he would say, you know, he's like, you know, I used to drink beer. It makes me feel terrible. And I thought he was being a baby. Honestly, I judged him because beer, you know. And then I made him do all this food allergy testing like 7 years ago. He's allergic to everything in beer, and it really makes him feel horrible. So I don't do a lot of brewery stuff with him. And we had Q with us. So, you know, one of those things. But I did have
So the Q's been cutting back then, huh?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. Okay. But I did have some amazing Polish sausage. Yeah. And some potato pancakes. It was delightful. But Milwaukee's a neat town. Really neat town. I'd like to go back there. Nice and cool right there on the shores of Lake Michigan. You know what I didn't see in Milwaukee, and I'm going to be investigating this? We didn't see a homeless person. And we were in downtown Milwaukee. Where are they? If they don't have them, how have they managed to do this?
I want to know what their laws and regulations
Correct.
Are governing the homeless. That's
yeah,
what
so
I
I'm going
to
be looking
out.
Into this in Milwaukee, and I'm sure there's homeless people in Milwaukee. I don't want to sit here and pretend like I think, oh, there's zero homeless people, but you sure don't see them. And they have beautiful parks on the waterfront. They have beautiful a marina. They have all of this beautiful area that in Denver would be completely covered by homeless people. And it's a nice little town. And then the Bucks won yesterday. Our waitress at the airport was like, trying to get home. Want to watch the Bucks play tonight? She was like 60. Gotta watch the Bucks play tonight. I love Wisconsin people. They're all so friendly. You know, they're just great. Hey, you guys have a great day. You betcha. They're just like, how can you
Gee,
not
you
love
could
that?
Move right in and they wouldn't even know.
No, it's fine. It was great. We had a great weekend. But let me tell you what's on the blog, because I have a story about what a horrible person I am for taking this weekend and traveling in an airplane to get to Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
You are part of the problem.
I'm a horrible person, Dave. I am a horrible human being. I hate the earth. I want it to die, at least according to one columnist. To find the blog, all you have to do is go to KOANewsRadio.com, click on anything that says Mandy Connell, or look for the headline that says Mandy's Monday Blog, Larry Reed and a Rat Utopia. Click on that, and here are the headlines you will find within.
Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. North and South American, all the ships and clippers at sea. Let's go to press flash.
Today on the blog, my favorite economic historian is on today to talk rat utopias. Don't let anyone gaslight you on critical race theory. And now, taxes explained with beer. Here are the super fun ways Governor Jared Polis is ruining the economy. CSU is making students pay over $1,600 to be officially indoctrinated. Illegal voting in Georgia was a thing. If your kids weren't in school last year, it's the teachers' union's fault. Who doesn't love being called beautiful? Cubans are rising up to demand the end of the communist regime, but who will I talk to about my car's extended warranty? Men are from Mars, women are from Venus, and they're hooking up tonight. Anti-racist principal tries to get white teachers fired. Shrinkflation is the perfect name for hidden inflation. Now progressives want to scold you for visiting your family. Pfizer wants to sell a booster shot, but the CDC says not so fast. Officials say we're all good for the All-Star game after a weapons bust. I want this guy to win everything. Healthy kids are not dying of COVID, and Christian Toto calls out his profession. Those are the headlines on the blog at KOANewsRadio.com on the Mandy Connell page. And starting at the very top, Larry Reed, President Emeritus of the Foundation for Economic Education, is back on. I read Larry's work all the time because I love Larry, and he's super smart, and he writes in a way that's very understandable. He had a column a couple of weeks ago that was about a rat utopia. A scientist in the 1960s, I believe, created a perfect world for rats to live in to see what would happen when all.
I thought it was called Chicago.
Not well. We're getting there. We're definitely getting there. But oddly, things did not end with great happiness and joy. And I read this article and it stuck with me. It struck me how similar we are to those rats right now. And when you hear how the rat utopia ended, or go to the blog and read about it, you should be concerned. We all should. And it's one of those things that makes you remember that though we are highly complex, evolved animals, we're just animals. We're animals. We're just smart animals with opposable thumbs. I mean, that's what we are. And there are certain things that we do that are entirely predictable because we are animals and we have self-motivation that is selfishly motivated. You know, very, very interesting. We're also going to talk about several failed utopian communities. We've had, over the history of this country, multiple experiments with communism and socialism in the form of utopian societies created by what's the word? Idealist. That's the word I'm looking for. And guess what, guys? Guess how many of them still exist? Big fat donut. You know why? Because people suck. I mean, there's a lot more to it, but the long and short of it is people suck. So we're going to talk about that. And Larry loves Calvin Coolidge. Do you know anything about Calvin Coolidge, Dave?
Yeah, he was great. I mean, he was the number one conservative president we've ever had. And we thrived during his presidency. Yeah.
And yet he gets shoved into the dustbin of history. I know very little about Calvin Coolidge, but Larry Reed has inspired me to learn more about Calvin Coolidge because he did things like have a balanced budget, pay down debt. Things of crazy things like that.
Well, all the people pretty much know about Calvin Coolidge is his nickname, Silent Cal. And he was known to be a man of very few words. And there's a joke that always runs around Coolidge. And it was said that some guy came up to him and said, "Here, you're a man of few words. Bet you $1,000 I can make you say more than two words." Coolidge looked at him and said, "You lose." No, I'm sure it's apocryphal, yeah. But I like it.
Yeah, who cares? There you go. We are in a very interesting time in the critical race theory battle because there is a concerted effort by progressives to rebrand the toxic garbage stew of critical race theory as we're just teaching history. That's it. No. Critical race theory is the ideology that says if you are white, you are the problem. And if you are a person of color, you are forever oppressed no matter what you do. And that skin color matters more than anything else about an individual. That is the crux of critical race theory. And the more the head of the teachers union, Randy Weingarten,
she is a piece of work.
I got to tell you, Dave, I'm not one to cast aspersions and use the word evil when it comes to people. But if she's not evil, I don't know what is. She's evil because at the same time, her organization at their recent convention voted to devote resources to attack parents who are anti-critical race theory. She's making the media circuit right now going, "We don't teach critical race theory. We don't teach critical race theory." They have allocated allocated dollars to defend critical race theory in schools from attack, and yet they're making the same argument at the exact same time. "Oh, we don't teach critical race theory." Well, then why would you have a legal fund to attack parents who push back against this? It doesn't make any sense.
I'll tell you, the left has made a big mistake. They've awakened the sleeping tiger on critical race theory in all aspects of our culture, not only schools, but the military, all over the place. And there's a lot of pushback, and it's exciting to see it.
I was talking to Father Mike over the weekend about specifically the fact that I'm encouraged that parents are starting to go to school board meetings and stand up. And he said, you know, it's the white middle class parents. They're very afraid of the social ostracization that comes along with bucking the trend. They're afraid of being called racist. They're afraid of all of these things. But the more people that stand up, the easier it gets for others to join you. So do not be afraid. Do not be afraid to stand up for your kid and say, you know what? My kid wasn't born a racist. As a matter of fact, my 10-year-old doesn't even, you know, I always use this example. When Q was about 7 years old, right? We were at a playground and she runs over after making a new best friend and says, oh, I made this new friend and I can't find them on the playground now. And I want to make sure I see them before I say goodbye, because now this is her new best friend that she met at the playground. And I said, well, what does the kid look like? She said, oh, she has on a red shirt and green shorts. Okay, great. So I look around, the kid was black. But it doesn't occur to my daughter to say, oh, the kid was black, wearing a red shirt and green shorts. She immediately went to what my daughter was, what she was wearing, which, by the way, I was able to help her locate the little girl. And she said goodbye before we left. And then we never saw her again, because that's how playground best friends go. But, you know, kids don't necessarily have that.
Well, it's like the South Pacific song. You have to be taught to hate.
Yeah.
And that's the whole idea of a lot of that Rodgers and Hammerstein musical. Yeah. And there's a lot of racism in there. And the whole idea is we're not born that way. We're conditioned that way.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And this is, I think, an incredibly dangerous moment for the National Teachers Unions and the Colorado Education Association, because of what Dave mentioned. We've just spent a year learning what our kids are learning and what they're not. And parents are like, wait a minute, this isn't what I signed up for. And at the same time, the Education Association, instead of listening to parents and working with parents, they're essentially telling parents, we own your children, sit down, shut up, we're going to teach them whatever we want. That's what's happening. That is a strategic error, in my opinion. And I'm not going to let this go. I'm going to continue. I'm going to have school board candidates on that are anti-critical race theory. And I certainly hope that you will all not just vote for them, but actively talk to your friends and neighbors about why this is important. Because the time for the silent majority, that's way past. Way, way, way past. We you all know, have I'd to love- get some bravery. Yeah, go ahead, Dave.
I'd love to see, you know, the left is so fond of canceling everybody they disagree with. I'd love to see a move to cancel anyone that is a strong supporter and implements critical race theory.
Exactly. And know what it is. Teaching
and know
children,
what it is to be canceled. Yeah. And you know, let's throw a little of this back on them.
Well, here's the thing. Do not allow someone to tell you that teaching history, teaching about racism and slavery in the United States of America, is what critical race theory is about. It's not. We must teach the history of this country accurately. We must talk about slavery in all its forms. We must talk about the Democrat enacted Jim Crow laws. We must talk about the civil rights movement. We must talk about things like redlining and things that have happened in the past. Otherwise, they're going to happen again. If you don't remember the past, you're condemned to repeat it, right? But at the same time, I refuse to allow my kid to be told, you're wrong because you're white. That's not going to happen on my watch. And that's what this is.
Yeah. And, you know, critical race theory, we've been teaching before critical race theory came on the scene just recently. We probably taught more about racism and slavery than ever before in our history. I know when I was a kid, it was taught, but it wasn't taught to the degree it is today, and that's a good thing. But once again, I think the left has made a big strategic error, and putting all their marbles in critical race theory, it's going to bite them.
The only way they win is if parents step down. If parents stop. If parents go, oh, they're not really teaching. Yes, they are. They are. We have a story on the blog today about a principal in New York who... Yes. Has now it created a huge, huge firestorm because she was trying to fire white teachers. She is black. Mm-hmm. She accused the white union representative of their school who was arguing about a labor issue. So he was complaining to her about a labor issue that she created. And she said, you're saying this because you're a white man and I'm a person of color. And he said, she said it in a staff meeting and the staff went, what? Because he's representing their interests in the conversation. She later said, I shouldn't have said that in a staff meeting, but I still believe it. I should have just said
it to you. I mean,
if
that's not the perfect example of playing the race card when you don't have an argument, I don't know what is.
She has asked faculty members to conspire with her to try and oust a white colleague. She has said that she will get all of the white teachers who don't care about their community out. I mean, she's a racist. She is fully a racist. And she's leading a school in New York. Now there's an investigation. I don't know. I've gotten to the point now where if I'm having a conversation or if I'm having a back and forth or if I'm having a nasty bit of business and they come at me, you need to read White Fragility. Okay, I did. It's garbage. It is absolute garbage. If I was to write a book called Black Fragility and make the same assumptions about what Black people feel and think as Robin DiAngelo makes in this book about white people, all white people, she may believe this stuff. This may be a window into her soul, but it is just crap. So if somebody says, you need to read this, I know exactly everything I need to know about them. And I've been very open. Read it, think it's crap. Absolutely. And here's the neat part about critical race theory. If you push back, that's proof of your racism. So they've created a perfect catch 22 where they say, wait a minute, hang on.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
We have created a catch 22 where if you say this is crap, the other side goes, oh, well, that's because you're a racist. We can't have a conversation with you because you're a racist. I'm not doing that. I'm not going to allow that to happen.
I've been working on this show too long. I swear to God, you mental telepathy.
Yeah.
I was going to make that precise point using catch 22.
Oh, it's insane.
I guess it's so obvious that everyone is going to think that no matter what you do, you are going to be a racist.
Correct.
There is no, if you deny it, you're in denial.
That you're the racist. Here's the thing though. There's no forward motion on this. There's no way to not, in the eyes of critical race theorists, for me to be a non-racist. I could spend my entire life, the rest of my life, like Mother Teresa, working solely in the communities of people of color to try and make their lives better, and they would accuse me of wanting to be a white savior. So no matter what you do, they have a nasty name to describe you if you're white. And I'm done with the whole thing.
And the other part of the puzzle is Black, African Americans cannot be racist by definition. They just can't because we have the power as white people. So there's another catch 22. You can do anything you want if you're an African American and you won't be accused of racism because it's impossible for that to happen. Yet white people, no matter what they do, have to be racist at the end of the day.
Yep. There you go. There's no way to not be racist. Here's a fun tweet, Dave, from 3348. Your whole campaign against teaching proper American history. There we go. That's the recasting of critical race theory as, quote, proper American history, which is crap. Your whole campaign against teaching proper American history is a farce. You should be ashamed of what ignorant S-heads you are. Anything that paints America in a negative light has been erased and the very mineralized in these blank-ass textbooks Texas mostly prints. The Native American Holocaust and slavery both have been nearly erased from our schools, and that's irresponsible. That is the dumbest thing I've ever read on the text line. And
just
I've read some dumbass stuff. Are you a moron? Good gravy. Have you opened a history textbook in the last 10 years? You dumbass. I'm sorry. You need to turn
the
wait, I'm not done with this
States.
Guy. You need to turn the station right now because you're not intelligent enough to listen to this show. Stop it. Turn the station. Go away. Never come back. You're not smart enough for this. And that's the problem. Oh, by the way, a lot of people are saying Milwaukee swept all the homeless people because of the game. Because the basketball finals are in Milwaukee. That makes sense. So they're all squeezed somewhere else. Good grief. But right now, we're going to check some messages and then get back with Larry Reed right after this. We are back. You guys, the text line's killing me today. Hilarious. Jimbo says, are the bats for self-defense? No, because there's no homeless people downtown anymore. I don't know if you guys have noticed this. They're all gone. Somebody had sent me an email and said, oh, they're all at I-25 in Arapahoe by the brand new Circle K. That's like the new homeless encampment. Great. Great. Super. Super. And this gentleman sent me a text. I responded to him. And he sent back a text that said, holy crap, you can text back? So I was trying to text him back and saying only occasionally, because most of the time the system will not let me text back. It gives me an error message. But it gave me an error message to text him back. So, sir, yeah, no. Sometimes I can. Sometimes I can't. There's no method to the madness. I don't know. Also on the blog today, let me see. I scroll back up here. Oh, really good video. Did you watch the tax system explained in beer, Dave?
I haven't yet watched it, but I'm going to.
If you want your students, your children, anyone who is a skull full of mush who thinks that tax cuts should not go to the richest people but should go to the poorest people, you need to watch this video with them. It's a nice illustration using beer of how the tax system works and why rich people get a bigger tax break when tax breaks are given, because they pay more in taxes. It's really simple, but this is a really good explanation. Great column on the super fun ways that Governor Jared Polis has destroyed Colorado's economy. Everybody thinks that our downturn, our high unemployment rate, by the way, in 2.5 years, we've gone from one of the lowest unemployment rates in the country to one of the highest. Do you know why? Because our governor will not end the extended unemployment benefits, and he is doing that to force businesses to raise their starting pay. Let me be clear about this. Our friend Chris Fuseley, the owner of Blake Street Tavern, tweeted, you know, why won't you end the unemployment? I'm like, he wants you to raise your pay for your employees. This is a play to force you to pay them more money. That's exactly what this is. Because if you are creating a labor shortage by letting people make more money on unemployment than they would perceive to make at a real job, you are creating the higher unemployment rate, and you're also creating a demand on labor that is false. It's not a real demand on labor. And if I were a business owner, I would do everything in my power to just stick it out till September 1st, because that's when they end in Colorado. All 27 or 28 other states have already ended the extended unemployment benefits. You know why? Because they can't get people to come back to work. I said something about this to a person that made the comment, well, you know what? You know, it's not like these people. It's you know, the jobs are no good. I'm like, well, they had them before the pandemic. There were people waiting tables before the pandemic. There were people working in retail before the pandemic. So obviously the jobs weren't so horrible that no one would take them. It's ridiculous. I mean, man, just ridiculous. And that's not all. Jared Polis has ruined our oil and gas economy. By the way, gas is a dollar more this year than it was last year. A dollar. Thanks to Joe Biden and Jared Polis, to be perfectly honest. We were energy independent last year. And Joe Biden came in and basically said, we're not going to do any more drilling. Jared Polis said, screw all those people who make money in the oil and gas industry. Am I right? I mean, who cares about them? This is after Colorado Open Records Act uncovered emails from employees at the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, which referred to the state's oil companies as Snake Oil Inc., Bad Oil and Gas, and Acme Company. These are the people that Jared Polis has regulating one of the most important industries in our state. But that's not all. Hey, let's raise the minimum wage. Let's just raise it. Now, Colorado has one of the highest minimum wages in the country. In the country. Did you see the story that happened I saw it over the weekend, Dave, that Walmart is now moving stores to all self-checkout. You will not have a Walmart cashier to kick around anymore. They're taking out the cashiers. They're putting everyone in self-checkout with quote, assistants that can come and help you when something won't scan or you're trying to buy beer or whatever it is. But you're not going to have a checkout person anymore. You know why? Why would they pay someone to do that job when they can pay one person to manage six checkout lanes at a time? because that's not a job that is going to pay a great deal of money. It's just not. And now we're going to replace those jobs with automation, with robots, with computers. And then the people that really get hurt are the people who need those entry-level jobs that are not going to be there anymore. Because an entry-level job doesn't pay 15 bucks an hour. It just doesn't. We also have rising payroll taxes because we now have the most generous paid family leave and medical leave law in the nation. So that's awesome. We've also had a great attack on agriculture. During the last day of the 2021 session, the legislature passed the Farm Workers Bill of Rights, which is going to wreak havoc on agriculture and the migrant workers who come in to pick our food. Because migrant workers come in during the summer to work 15-hour days. Because that's what agriculture is. If you know anything about agriculture, they don't care about time clocks because it is an activity that has a finite span when it can be completed. You can't say, you know what, we're going to just have you guys work 40 hours a week and you can come pick those strawberries in January for 40 hours a week. That's not how it works. It is weather and season dependent work. Migrant workers know this. They come in and work their tails off the entire summer, but they don't work as much in the winter unless they go back to Mexico and pick things there. I mean, it's the way that agriculture has always been done. I guess I was lucky enough to grow up in a rural area, and I had friends throughout my entire high school life that got up at 4 o'clock in the morning to work on the farm for 3 hours before they went to school, and then they went to school, and then they went home in the afternoon, and they worked on the farm till dark. And they did that from like April to end of September. That was their job. But the rest of the winter, you know, it gets a lot easier. So that's been done as well. We also have not stopped the unemployment benefits. This last legislative session was full of new taxes and fees. They're taxes, but they're called fees because they think they can get around Tabor that way. We also have a declining economic climate here in Colorado. We've been downgraded. And our state unemployment rate is stagnant at 6.4%. Do you know what the unemployment rate is in Florida right now? 2.9%. You know why? They ended the unemployment benefits and people went back to work. So this is what passes for leadership. And I sure hope that the Republican Party takes this column and makes a series of campaign ads about it. This is what you voted for and this is what you got. You got a state that is in worse economic condition. Our entire unemployment fund has been completely depleted. It's now in the red. We had $1 billion and something in there. It's now gone. How do we make that up? Employers are going to have to pay more to make that up. All of this stuff is going to tamp down our economic recovery. All of it. I mean, all of it. So, great column by Ben Murray from the... I think he's with the Independence Institute. Let me double check. Let me go scroll down and see what his deal is. He's a fiscal policy director at the Independence Institute. And, you know, it's just, it's insane what's happening. And it's insane that people are too stupid to see the connection. Even though every time it's tried, when FDR expanded government spending to, quote, solve the Great Depression, all he did was extend it. The TARP bailout, every action taken by the Obama administration just extended the Great Recession of 2008. If you don't muck around with things, the economy will go in a V-shaped, you know, you drop fast in a recession. But if you just don't mess with anything, we come out of it in a V-shape. Unless it's under Democrats, in which case it gets extended out into a U. And that's what we're seeing again right now. CSU is making students pay over $1,600 so they can be officially brainwashed with a 3-hour course of diversity and equity claptrap in order to graduate. I sure hope somebody pushes back against that. There was illegal voting in Georgia. It may be significant to overturn that election, but it still will not mean that Donald Trump is president. But it does mean that we need to ensure election integrity going forward. That's on the blog today. Great article about the teachers' unions and how they kept your kids out of school last year and are trying to do. Well, now Randy Weingart's like, we've got to have the kids back in school in the fall. California has already mandated that students wear masks. I would not participate in that. I'm just not. When we get back in a few minutes, I've got Larry Reed, Professor Emeritus of the Foundation for Economic Education. And before that, though, Dave, I love this puppy that you sent the picture of, the video of, the puppy. Her mama calls her beautiful, and she's so sweet. Don't you want a puppy after seeing that, Dave?
No.
Well, that's not cool.
I mean, it makes sounds that it understood. Thank you for calling me beautiful. I like that.
There's a little bit of aw shucks to it, too. Like, aw, mom, thank you. We're officially in the market for a puppy right now in our house.
What kind?
We don't know. We're kind of open. I don't want a dog that runs away. Been there, done that. I want another St. Bernard, but Chuck's not on board yet. And I don't know where I could get a St. Bernard right now. But we'll see. Chuck says we don't have enough room in our house for two St. Bernards. I say blasphemy. Blasphemy. We have plenty of room for two St. Bernards. Who doesn't? Good news, unless you're worried about your car's extended warranty. The FCC and phone carriers are working with new technology designed to stop the robocalls from spoofed numbers. Dave, how am I going to be told that the IRS is sending the cops to my house now if they stop the robocalls that are saying that? We are sending the cops to your house if you do not call us back right now. No. Not buying what you're selling. All right, we're going to be back with Larry Reed in just a few minutes. You guys, this story that he has about an experiment about a rat utopia is going to blow your mind. We're going to do that with him next and some other stuff. But first, my pals Big Al and JoJo are downtown at the corner of 16th and Market at T-Mobile, where they are giving out professionally engraved little baseball bats. And I, for one, would like one. I'm just saying, guys. I'm just saying. I'd like one.
All right, I'll get you one. I'll certainly get one great for you, Mandy. You'll have it. I'll leave it in the studio for you. You can find it in like a month or so when you come back.
Hey, let's not get crazy. What's going on down there?
We're at the T-Mobile store. We're at 16th and Market. And it's actually a very cool setup here. You can come get your very own Major League Baseball mini bat. Yes, they can engrave it with the proper amount of characters in your name, which you want engraved. And you can get it decorated to look exactly the way you want. And they're also going to have some former Major League players that are going to be here signing autographs. Al, first, who's going to be here?
Yeah, this is going to be fantastic. You can engrave the wood bat, your mini wood bat, pick out your grip, and they have a memento from the All-Star Weekend. And don't forget, if you can't make it the day before 6 p.m., you can stop by the T-Mobile store at 16th and Market tomorrow between 11 and 6 to customize your own MLB mini bat. And don't forget, T-Mobile is a sponsor of the Home Run Derby, which is a big, hot ticket item here in Denver.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. There's a DJ here inside. We've got free food. So make sure you take the time. Come out and see us. Again, 16th and Market. Vinny Castilla, former Colorado Rocky, is going to be here signing autographs at around 2 o'clock. So come on by. Again, 16th and Market. We're at the team store. It's Big Allen JoJo for KOA. And I'm getting your bat made right now, Mandy.
All right, do it. We'll talk to you guys in a bit. Go see them at the corner of 16th and Market. And they're going to be doing their show a little bit later from right across Blake. They're at Blake and 20th, right across from the stadium. So go say hi to Big Allen JoJo. But right now, we're going to check some messages and then get back with Larry Reed right after this.
Mandy Connell Show is sponsored by Bell and Pollock Accident and Injury Lawyers.
Now, it's Mandy Connell on KOA News Radio, the voice of Colorado.
Welcome, welcome to the second hour of the show. And because I firmly and 100% believe that if you don't remember history, you are condemned to repeat it, I'm pleased as punch to have my favorite economic historian, President Emeritus of the Foundation for Economic Education, Larry Reed, as our guest this month. Hi, Larry. How are you?
Hey, terrific, Mandy. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. We were just chatting on the break because I have three stories on the blog today. And one of them is about, would you say Calvin Coolidge might be one of your favorite presidents, Larry? Because you speak of him in glowing terms.
Yes, he's one of my four or five favorite of the 46 we've had, and just a wonderful guy. Will be coming up in just 2 years on the centennial of the day that he took office as president in August of 1923.
Now, Calvin Coolidge kind of gets a bad rap in that he preceded the Great Depression, and people looking to blame the Great Depression on, you know, government policies will often wrap him into that. But that's not at all an accurate, as you know, assertion of his place in history. Why do you love him so much?
Well, you know, when it comes to the Great Depression, the primary cause of that was not Calvin Coolidge or any of his policies. It was the monetary policy of the Federal Reserve. And that's something that even the two or three Federal Reserve Board chairmen ago, Ben Bernanke, actually admitted to. He said, yeah, we caused the Depression. We just won't do that again. But Coolidge, I love him because he was a man of solid principle, sterling honesty. He believed in the ideas that led to the founding of this country. He believed firmly his job was not to stretch the Constitution or torture it until it confessed to powers that the founders never gave it, but rather to uphold it. And he certainly did. And he reduced the national debt by a third while he was in office. He reduced tax rates by two-thirds and did a marvelous job.
So what you're saying is he could never get elected today.
Yeah, probably.
Let's be real.
The government was actually smaller when he left office than it was when he took office. And apparently today that's not what people want, or at least that's not what they're getting.
No. So that's not what they're voting for. You know, we have an electorate that is very keen to vote themselves the treasury whenever they have an opportunity. And we see it over and over again, especially here in Colorado. We were talking about some of our governor's policies that have crushed our economy in the last 2 years, and people voted for him and they'll probably vote for him again. I don't understand why, but here we are. The thing I really want to talk about today, and I threw in Calvin Coolidge because I know you love him so. Great column on Calvin Coolidge that made me want to learn more. But we have to talk about the rat utopia, because I read this column and it stuck with me. It stuck with me and it festered in my brain. And I thought, I know it's going to sound crazy to people when we say you need to hear about this rat sociology experiment and realize that we are just rats, only bigger, more evolved rats, because we act in the same fashion. Tell me about the rat utopia experiment.
Okay. Well, you know, Mandy, that if you've been to any national park or even most of the state parks, you'll see signs that warn the visitors, please don't feed the animals. Some of those parks even provide additional explanation, like the animals may bite or it makes them dependent. And of course, that's true. But what a lot of people don't understand is that to a considerable extent, those same warnings really apply to humans, that if you put them in a situation where they have no challenges, everything's taken care of, they don't have to worry about anything, every need, every want is provided, some really bad things begin to happen, because that kind of environment, very unnatural, runs counter to human nature. Now, there was a ethologist, E-T-H-O-L-O-G-I-S-T, ethologist, who was a person who studies animal behavior, by the name of Dr. John Calhoun, who conducted some experiments on mice. And I think you and I have referred to rats, but actually maybe later he used
rats. I thought
rats,
the mouse utopia was actually Disney World, was the mouse utopia. So I was calling the rat. No, I'm just kidding. I rat utopia sounds more sinister than mouse utopia, you know, so.
But when Calhoun was at the National Institute for Mental Health in the 1960s, he experimented on mice to see how they would react in a controlled environment of everything taken care of for them. He started with four pairs of mice. And by the way, he did this many times. He replicated this over and over again. Each time he started with four pairs of mice, eight altogether. He put them in a pen that could accommodate several thousand of them. He provided water dispensers and tunnels and food bins and nesting boxes, all the food and water that they needed. He made sure that they had no predator to worry about. And off they went, and they doubled their numbers about every 55 days. But around day 315, Calhoun observed some really incredible reactions. That's when the first signs appeared of a breakdown in social norms among the mice, aberrations, both sexual and social. The females began to abandon their young. Males no longer defended their territory. Both sexes became more violent and aggressive. There was deviant behavior of all kinds, frequently increasingly violent. And the last 1,000 mice to be born in this environment, actually, Calhoun called them the beautiful ones because to avoid any stressful activity, they focused all of their attention on themselves. They just groomed each other or groomed themselves constantly, never got off their butts to do anything. And the population turned south, and actually they were, you might say, socialized into oblivion, because they actually went down to zero. They all died, not because of any absence of food or room or nesting. All of that was continuously provided, but they just attacked each other or fell apart in various ways until they became extinct.
And you know, in your column, you make the point that some people say, look, it's the result of crowded conditions. It's the result of not having enough space. But the fact that it's been replicated over and over and over again would indicate some kind of, I don't know, consistent condition of the mouse spirit that yeah. declined over that time. And after I read this, how can you not draw the parallels to where we are now? You know,
yeah, I think the parallels are quite alarming. You know, the numbers fell at their peak. They fell far short of what the facility could have accommodated. So it wasn't overcrowding. Even Calhoun observed that. He said it, you know, he could have accommodated at least 1,600 more mice. There were plenty of like 20% of the nesting boxes within the confines of the space were unoccupied. So it wasn't lack of space. It was ultimately the lack of a healthy challenge. They just were spoiled to death, literally.
You know, Larry, you can see this acted out in real life in trust fund kids. You know, yeah. when you have an inherited wealth and you know that you are sitting on a $300 million fortune, you don't have to work. You see story after story of the children of incredibly wealthy people succumbing to drug addiction, succumbing mm-hmm. to kind of lifestyle choices that come from not having a healthy challenge. And, you know, when I look at people like Warren Buffett, I saw a story about Warren Buffett years ago, and he said, look, you know what? I'm giving away all my wealth. I'm going to leave my kids a little nest egg of $10 million. But, you know, I thought $10 million to a normal person, you're like $10 million. I could retire. But it's
that would also be funny to spoil me.
Yeah, exactly. But it's why people don't realize this. When you build a fortune, when you are the person who builds a fortune, most likely it's gone by the third generation. Because the third generation yeah. doesn't know the value of the work that went into building that fortune, and they are far more likely to squander it because they don't have a dog yeah. in that fight. They weren't part of the healthy challenge. So, yeah. you know, Larry, how can we, as a society, help people understand? Perfect example, paying people not to work on unemployment. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying these people are turning into rats and that their colony is going to collapse, but disincentivizing something that is so crucial to our human selves, to our being, which is work. And I'm not saying that one form of work is better than the other, but if you don't have a purpose, it's easy to find. Another example, I just thought of this one. When you look at the level of drug addiction in the poorest parts of the nation, in mm-hmm. Eastern Kentucky, where they shut down all the coal mines, you have huge issues with heroin addiction, OxyContin addiction, because people lost their purpose. And instead of having a purpose, they found an escape in drugs.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, Mandy, that the best way to educate people about this is to talk, as you know, I do every chance I get, about the importance of character, because, you know, character means such things as being self-reliant to the extent your abilities allow you to be so. Character means you know, working for a living instead of just voting for one. It means finding something that you can do that is of value to other people and do it, not sit around and wait for others to simply provide you with a living. So we can tell people about what happens when you do this to mice, this socialized welfare state stuff. But maybe the best way to convince them of the danger of this is to talk to them in terms of their kids. I mean, most people, even the ones who do spoil their kids, I think if you had a moment with them and sat down and said, you know, do you really think that giving your kid everything and anything he or she wants is a way to bring them up such that they'll live productive and self-reliant lives? I mean, nobody in their right mind thinks that. Mm-mm. And yet a lot of people do it anyway.
Yeah, Dave.
Yeah, and you see it more and more, these experiments around the country providing, you know, rich people providing a living wage for a community or a group of people so that they don't have to work or do anything.
And a universal basic income is what you're talking
exactly.
about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Another thing, I read this study, you know, this mouse study, and one of the lesser known results way buried in the footnotes was they found after a time that the adult mice were trying to teach critical race theory to the baby mice. And that really started to go downhill right after that.
Yeah, then that would be entirely predictable, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you know, the part of this. Go ahead, Larry.
I was going to say, I may have sent you a link to another article I wrote, Mandy, that really relates to this. In American history, between 1800 and 1860, we had 119 of these socialist commune-type places set up with a lot of the same mentality. Oh, we don't want to have competition. We don't want to have challenges. We want everybody to be taken care of. And we'll do it by requiring that everybody put their stuff in a common storehouse and then they get an equal share of it and so forth. 119 of those experiments, not a single one worked. The one called Brook Farm near Boston lasted longer than almost all of them, but it only lasted 6 years. They fall apart and people either leave or they die.
Yeah, well, one of my favorites is the Koreshans. The Koreshans set up camp in Estero, Florida, and they believed that the earth was concave and we lived in the center of the earth. But unfortunately for the Koreshans, they also believed that you should not have sex. So a lot of people left because of that, and the rest of them died, and there was no replacement factor for that. But I put that article on the blog today because I think it's really important, because right now, and this is happening currently right now in Cuba, you have people taking to the streets who want to end the communist regime. Oddly enough, they're talking about how crappy their socialized healthcare is. But these are people that have been promised a utopia that cannot be delivered because human nature is selfish. We are built to take care of us and ours first, and everybody else kind of fend for yourself. And we've seen that happen all the time, where the leadership of these communist and dictatorial societies live very, very well while the rest of the population suffers. So this is a great analogy for these young idealists who say, oh, if we could only have, you know, socialism or communism, it would be great because we'd all be equal. We're never all going to be equal. Because
That word that you refer to, selfish, is often thought of in a very negative way. And certainly, like anything, it can be taken to an extreme. But I think we should be glad that people have a selfish nature, because after all, how can you help me if you can't help yourself?
Right.
I mean, if you can't or won't or don't know how to help yourself, please leave me alone.
Let me ask one more question about the mouse utopia, because one of the things that I was not clear on, if there was any kind of a theory about why the mice resorted to violence. When you reached a certain point, you seem to have a higher level of violence. And they devolve in society, they become more depraved. Why is that? Is there any kind of theory about what that is? Is it just because the idle hands are the devil's workshop? I mean, I don't want to oversimplify, but it seems that there's something to
that. That's pretty much what Calhoun, the researcher, came to the conclusion that if you don't have a healthy challenge, such as providing for yourself or your family or following your unique skill or, you know, any number of things that productive people engage in a free society, well, then that energy is going to be directed in some other direction. And if it can't go into productive endeavors, such as providing for yourself, because you don't have to do that, well, then one direction it can go is violence against your fellow mouse, in the case of his experiments.
Well, I mean, but you think about it, and in terms of people that live in areas with a high level of government dependence, and by the way, this is true for Black people, this is true for white people, this is true for brown people. If you live in an area of a high level of government dependence, chances are you live in a place with a lot of violence. And I've always thought there was other external motivators there, but you have to think about that in the context of this study. And it's like, okay, so are we now just creating I hate to say a mouse utopia for human beings, but when you are not responsible for any aspect of your life and you live in a high crime area, how are those two things connected? I mean, they have to be.
Yeah, we are kind of imitating what Calhoun found in his mice experiment. There's another aspect of human nature at work here, and that is that humans are not perfect. We are flawed.
No.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? And I know a lot of progressives like to think, well, if that's the case, we can kind of iron out the flaws if we just put our friends in charge of political power. But the fact is that there is a sin nature, as Christians might say, in every one of us. And if you don't have a productive line of work to follow, if everything's taken care of for you, well, then, you're going to find some other channels to go down to release that energy. And that helps to explain, I think, where the violence comes from in places like this. What else are you going to do for fun?
Yeah. I'm talking with Larry Reed. He's the president emeritus of the Foundation for Economic Education. I want to continue this conversation on the other side of the break, kind of springboarding off of what you just said, Larry. And it's something I tell people all the time. I don't worship other human beings because other human beings will inevitably disappoint me. That's just the way it is. We'll continue this conversation after the break. But I got to check in with Big Al and JoJo. They are downtown at the T-Mobile store at the corner of 16th and Market. They're going to be there until, what are you going to be there, till 2 o'clock? What time are you guys going to be there till? JoJo, Big Al?
I'm here, but we'll be here until 2 o'clock. But at 2 o'clock, we got Benny Castilla that's going to step in, and he'll be here signing autographs. We're at the corner of 16th and Market at the T-Mobile store. And if you show up, you can get your very own customized MLB mini bat while supplies last. And I'm telling you, these things are outstanding. They're made of wood. And don't forget that we have a DJ here, free food. We have drinks. It's going to be a great party. All you have to do is come on down to 16th and Market, and it's going to be a fantastic time. Do I have my man JoJo? I know he's around here somewhere.
Well, it sounds busy as all get out down there. People milling about getting ready for the Home Run Derby tonight.
I mean, there's a DJ in here playing music. There's food. There's these mini bats being made. Yeah, I mean, it's actually pretty crazy down here. Downtown right now there's been the most people I've seen since, obviously, we've come out of COVID. So it's nice to see everybody is out and about. But, yeah, we're going to be here until 2 o'clock. And then, Mandy, we roll up to Blake Street, where we'll be broadcasting live, doing our entire show right across the Coors Field later on.
All right. So go down and see Big Al and JoJo at the T-Mobile store. Get down there today. You can also, if you can't make it today, you can head down tomorrow between 11 and 6 and get your bat as long as they last. And then check them out. They're right across from the entrance of 20th and Blake. They're going to be doing their show down there from 3 to 6 as we get ready for our Home Run Derby coverage. Right now, I'm going to check in with Susan Witkin, find out what's coming up in her news. What do you have for me, Susan?
Well, a third COVID shot may be coming our way in the form of a booster. Who's going to pay for it? I'll let you know at 1:30 on KOE News Radio, 850 AM and 94.1 FM.
Larry Reed, the President Emeritus of the Foundation for Economic Education, my favorite economic historian, is on the show. Maybe his last appearance. Larry just told us that after the show, he's on his way to Spain to take on the Walkway of Death. And that's what it's called, the Walkway. How did you find out about the Walkway of Death quickly?
Well, I have to go to Malaga, Spain, to give a speech next Friday, and I wanted to go a little early. So I went online and just typed in, what do you do in Malaga? And one of the options was to get on this little van that takes you up into the mountains, and you buy a ticket ahead of time and do the Walkway of Death. And I thought, well, hey, that sounds interesting. So
do you still get paid for the speech if you die in Spain before you get there? I mean, how does that work out? Like, what happens there?
No, what happens if you survive this, you get to the run with the bulls the next day?
I've done that, as a matter of fact.
Have you?
I'm comforted by the fact that their website says that most people do survive it.
Oh, most. Okay, well,
most,
then
51.2% have survived it.
And Larry says to me, well, it's this walkway on a sheer cliff face. And I'm thinking, we have trails like that in Colorado that I've actually been on some of those trails where at some points the trail is very narrow and to your left is rock face and to the right is a sheer drop. This isn't even like a rock walkway. It's a shady looking wooden track that they stuck onto the side of the mountain. Looks like it was put up by carnival workers, for God's sakes. I'm concerned. You're going to have to text me.
Good super glue.
Yeah, text me and let me know when you make it through this thing, assuming that you do. I'm not sure. I would do that. That looks really...
I'll go to Thursday, so I'll send you the link to the pictures by Friday.
And it appears...
If you don't get them, I didn't make it.
It appears that they put a new one over the old one, and when you see how dodgy the old one was, knowing that people used to walk on that, no wonder it's the Walkway of Death. That's crazy.
Yeah, apparently it's a lot safer now, but there were quite a few people who fell off of the old trail before they fixed it in 2015.
Uh-huh. It used to be called the Walkway of Delight, and they crossed off the rest of Delight when someone croaked on it.
It's fine. It's the Caminito del Rey if you want to check it out and have your own walkway of death experience. Before the break, we were talking about utopian societies and how they have failed massively. And I remembered a story that it was right after 9/11, and I was at a big rally in a medium-sized town in Florida. I ended up talking to this woman. I didn't know her. But for some reason, the conversation came around to the fact that she had been a protester during the Vietnam War, and she was deeply ashamed of her activities during that time frame in her life, and she was really happy to come out for this big rah-rah America rally in 2001. And she, in the course of this conversation, said, oh, yeah, when I was 18, I went to live on a commune in California. And I said, well, what was that like? Because this is all the time where we were doing a lot of these kind of hippie experiments in America. And she said, oh, the first 6 months were amazing. Everybody worked together. It was collaborative. We had a great time. Everybody was just on the same page. And I said, what happened after 6 months? She said, the moochers showed up. Word got out that you could go live here and they would feed you and you had a place to stay. And the moochers showed up and they didn't want to work. The rest of us were all in it together. And the moochers showed up and all of a sudden we were doing all the work for them. And one by one, all of the regular group, those people who had started it, peeled away. And then they were just left with the moochers and the whole thing collapsed. That's pretty much the story of every utopian society, isn't it?
It really is. In fact, I recently did some research on this. Between 1800 and 1860, there was a movement around the country spurred by various writers, intellectuals, academics to start these communes. There were 119 of them started in that 60-year period. Not a one of them survived. One of the longest ones was 6 years, Brook Farm outside of Boston. But the story was the same over and over again. They all start with a lot of enthusiasm. Oh, we're not going to have any competition. Everybody's going to live for each other instead of themselves. Nobody will be selfish. And then no time at all, human nature asserts itself and all these silly plans fall apart and people either end up leaving or starving. And in fact, I found a great quote in researching Brook Farm. One of the guys who was talked into joining it early because he fell in love with this idea that, oh, competition, instead of that, we're going to have cooperation. And when he left after about 2 years, he told the founder, cooperation has well nigh killed us all.
but yet we live in a society now. And one of the reasons that I love talking to you, Larry, is that we can talk about these historical things, and yet they're all happening right now. We have democratic socialists in this country who truly believe that central planning is the key to happiness, even though it has never succeeded before ever. So I want to ask you this question. Why do people keep getting sucked in to these thoughts, these notions, this big dream that they're going to overcome human nature, what we were also talking about in the last segment, and create some kind of utopian society, when all of these people have tried the exact same thing before them and it has not worked? Why is this so appealing?
They're not using their brains. They're using their gut, their emotion. They think that, we can make every place a Disneyland, you know, where everybody lives happily ever after. It's kind of a failure to come to grips with reality. It's wishful thinking. It's off-the-wall, ivory tower, cooked-up schemes instead of dealing with reality and making the best of it as it exists. And some people, they go through decades of their lives before, if ever, before they come to their senses and realize that, hey, you know, the world doesn't work that way. It's just, this is Earth. This is not some distant planet where human nature doesn't apply.
But doesn't it also take, in all of these instances that you give in the article that I have linked on the blog today, there is a driving force. There's a person whose ego is so large that they believe they have the answer. And one of the points that you make that I think is really, really interesting is that in one of these planned communities, it might have been Brook Farm, it might have been one of the other ones, I don't remember, you point out that they have to grossly oversimplify the different categories that people are going to plug into to work, because to have too many categories is too unwieldy. So in order to plan an entire economy, you have to make it so simple that it can be managed. But that's not real. That's not a real life situation. And yet, do we always have someone in charge? And I'm just going to say it up to this point, some guy in charge who thinks, I have the answers. I can fix the world if they'll just do what I need them to do.
Yeah, every one of these has some guy who is the inspiration to get these other people to be duped into following his notions. Robert Owen, he was responsible for at least 14 of these utopian communities in America. Every single one of them fell apart within 5 years. But, you know, he was inspiring. He told people, oh, we're going to do these wonderful things and you won't have to worry about anything and blah, blah, blah. We're going to make heaven on earth and so forth. And, if you're dumb or gullible or not using your brain, you could get suckered into it. I have a great quote from this guy, Charles Fourier. He was the inspiration for Brook Farm and some others as well. And he actually said, here it is. He said that if everybody took his advice and lived on these communes, he said, men will live to the age of 144. The sea will become lemonade. A new aurora borealis will heat the poles. Wars will be replaced by great cake-eating contests between gastronomic armies. I mean, what a nutcase.
Well, but the thing about it is that it, in one way, I guess I'm glad that they chose to use their charismatic power to try and create something good, because we know what happens when charismatic leaders use their power for evil. We've seen that happen throughout history as well. But talking about the level of idealism that is required, I've looked at this and I'm thinking to myself, I think that this kind of conversation, and this goes as true today as it did in the 1800s, I think that people who are drawn to this are also drawn to it because they believe that they are good enough people, that they are stellar enough human beings to work collectively as a group and be above all of the petty kind of nonsense that it's involved with a free society. And I think that that's very appealing because it feeds people's egos. It makes them feel superior to their fellow man living the old way.
Yeah, and as you alluded to at the start of what you just said, Mandy, I give them credit for going out and doing it on their own and doing it with their own money. it was a rather painful lesson to have to learn for them that this stuff doesn't work. But just imagine what socialism today is, those utopian communes with a Berlin Wall, with a police force, with secret police, with all kinds of concentrated political power. At least at Brook Farm and those other utopian communities that we have referred to, if you didn't like it after a while, you could freely walk away. Mm-hmm. And they did. But, under true socialism today, you wouldn't be able to walk away. And there's nothing voluntary about today's socialism.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Dave.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, Larry, but Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations, which is basically what our system is based on now, he didn't create a new system of economics. He just observed how people behaved when they were left to their own devices and wrote it down.
Yeah.
So he was paying attention to human nature, unlike these others.
That's right. He didn't try to prescribe how people should live. He didn't come up with all kinds of schemes and concoctions. He didn't read tarot cards and of course he preceded Marx, so he couldn't have read him. He just said, here's the way humans are as I've observed them. And I think there's more value to that kind. That's real science, mm-hmm. as opposed to somebody saying, here's how I think the world ought to be. And let's make people do this.
When I talk to young people and one of my best friend's son is now in college, so he's a freshman in college, so he knows everything. And he's decided that, socialism is the way to go. I always ask, how do you overcome the problem of human nature? How do you overcome that part of the issue? And aside from a frontal lobotomy, I don't know if you can. You cannot force someone to work for someone else as hard as they're going to work for themselves. So how do you, when you're talking to young people, Larry, how do you express the futility of that very ideal? I mean, it would be great. It would really be great if we could all work collectively like an ant farm and everybody was happy with the same thing that everybody else had. But that's not where we are. So when you talk to young people, how do you kind of talk that down or try to shift their thinking on that?
Well, I try to appeal to their sense of logic. I try to inculcate an appreciation for actual real world experience, try to get them to think in terms of reality, not dreams and concoctions. And if I have time, I sit them down and have them watch a movie that came out a few years ago called Ants, A-N-T-Z. Oh my gosh, Ants is I don't know if the filmmakers intended it to be, but it is a compelling case against collectivism and in favor of individuals. To make a long story short, in that animated movie, the hero of the ant colony is the one ant, his name is Z, who decides he's not going to follow orders and live his life as somebody at the top tells him he should live it. He's going to follow his own dreams and his own ambitions and goals and so forth. And he ends up saving the entire colony from the evil tyrants at the top who want everybody to just follow orders and live according to their plan. I mean, there's no way you can watch that movie with an open mind and come away a collectivist.
Well, that's a great thing to know. I'm going to definitely. I think I've seen that movie. I can't remember the voices.
Isn't Woody
in
Allen
that.
The head ant in that?
There was another ant movie at that same time. I can't think of its name, and he was in that one, I think. But maybe this one too. I know Sylvester Stallone's voice is in it.
Seen this movie. Ah, yes, Z4195. That's his name, ZY4195. Yeah, Woody Allen, Sharon Stone, Gene Hackman. Those are the voices in Ants. So
it's the only movie I felt compelled the first time I saw it to pull out business cards so I could take notes on the back of them.
Wow.
Because it had so many good one-liners.
Good to know. It's frustrating for me that we have people that are still really working very, very hard to undermine capitalism because they truly believe that this is a better way and that they can make this happen. And it seems to be gaining more strength, but you and I have talked extensively about the fall of empires and that we are a declining empire. I mean, I think we're in agreement. Dave actually asked off the air. So in that mouse study we talked about in the first segment of the show, it was 315 days before the colony collapsed. Dave asked Larry, what day are we on? And what did you say, Larry?
I said 314.
Yeah, so that's encouraging. Great, encouraging. And one of the reasons I have you on, though, Larry, is because I want to arm my listeners with the knowledge of history. Because when you understand history, I tell my daughter all the time, you know, you think things are a lot different when you're in school. The only thing that's changed is the methodology, okay? Yeah. Human nature remains the same. The methodology of torture changes, but the human nature does not evolve that much as we'd like to think it does. It really doesn't. And so hopefully you are going to be arming people with information that they can then take to their kids and take to their family. And I got to tell you, my little socialist friend, I'm sending him a text message today that says two things. Look at what's happening in Cuba and read about this farm in New York, this utopian society, because it's great to believe in the best of humanity. But unfortunately, we see over and over again that most people are path of least resistance people. And they're not going to work hard if they don't have to.
And another great book that people have been reading for a couple hundred years is Tocqueville's Democracy of America, which observed Americans as they behaved. And he made some profound conclusions from his observations. We're not observing. We're trying to impose.
Exactly.
These days.
Larry, we're out of time. I appreciate you so very much. Please don't die on the walkway of death because, I'll expect some kind of notification that you have made it safely through the walkway of death or whatever. I'll just keep my eyes open. We will talk to you again next month. And thank you for coming on and hopefully giving people the tools they need to fight back against this stuff going forward.
Always a pleasure, Mandy. And thank you, Dave, as well. It's been great, as always. See you next month.
Safe travels, my friend. Safe travels. That's Larry Reed. He is the president emeritus of the Foundation of Economic Education. FEE.org is one of the best resources out there for economic info. Speaking of economics, Big Al and JoJo are down at T-Mobile, and they're hoping people come down and hang out because it's All-Star Home Run Derby weekend. And there are bats to be given away. What are you guys doing right now? JoJo?
Well, Alfred is here.
Oh, Alfred. Hello, Alfred. I can hear JoJo in the background.
You guys can join us right now at the T-Mobile store at 16th and Market. You can score a free customized MLB mini bat while supplies last. And, of course, you're going to have this bat that is engraved in wood. You pick out your grip and how you want it finished up, and you're going to have a great time down here. Once again, we're at the corner of 16th and Market at the T-Mobile store. And don't forget that T-Mobile is hosting the Home Run Derby. So it's going to be a great time. You're going to feel like you're in somewhere special because my man, Benny Castilla, is walking through the door any minute now.
All right.
So if you have a chance, please make sure you come down and see us. And then don't forget, we're going to be broadcasting live in front of Blake Street with our friends at T-Mobile. We'll be right across from Coors Field there at 20th and Blake. But if you have a chance, make sure you come out here and see us. There's a giant line here at 16th and Market, so it is hard to miss us here at the T-Mobile store, Mandy.
All right, that's happening. They're going to be down there for a few more minutes. Then go check them out across from the stadium. Go say hi to Big Al and JoJo. Say hi to the folks at T-Mobile. Get your free engraved bat and then head over to Home Run Derby tonight. We're going to have coverage all night long. We'll check in with them a little bit later when their show starts at 3. But let's check in with Susan Witkin now and find out what's happening.
We are learning more about the four suspects who were busted in a hotel just blocks away from Coors Field. They had a cache of ammo, weapons, and drugs. 2 o'clock right here, KOA News Radio, 850 AM and 94.1 FM.
The Mandy Connell Show is sponsored by Bell and Pollock Accident and Injury Lawyers.
Now, it's Mandy Connell on KOA News Radio, the voice of Colorado.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the third hour of the show. My name is Mandy Connell. Dave, the intrepid producer, is here as well. Coov pushing the buttons, making us sound smart. Lots and lots of stuff on the blog today. And, I mentioned this before, but the Cuban people have taken to the streets to demand the end of the communist regime. And frankly, I've been waiting for this since Fidel Castro died, because Raul Castro is not Fidel Castro. And I think that the Cuban people have had enough. Now, the Cubans are shutting off the internet right now on Cuba, so people cannot get videos out. And I would imagine that Guantanamo Bay is now setting up a massive Wi-Fi position so we can... I mean, Guantanamo Bay is on Cuba. You have to remember that. It is part of Cuba. So if I were the U.S. government, I would be setting up a massive Wi-Fi display at Guantanamo Bay that could cover as much of the island as you could possibly imagine. Because this is the kind of stuff that people need to know about. They need to understand what's happening. And what's funny is lots of people, and I say on the blog, conservatives rose up and supported this. There are a lot of Democratic lawmakers who have also commented and made positive comments about what's happening in Cuba. But oddly, the squad has been silent.
Absolute silence.
Crickets coming from the squad. Nothing.
And nothing coming from Bernie either.
Yeah. Oh, completely quiet. Completely silent. Oddly, the same way they reacted to Venezuela. Nobody talked. You know, there was a story a couple, it might have been last week, and I don't think I put it on the blog. But Sean Penn went to Venezuela to visit Hugo Chavez multiple times. He went down to Venezuela to visit Maduro, the new president, when Hugo Chavez died. That guy has done everything to support a totalitarian regime in Venezuela that he could possibly do. And he actually had the nerve to complain about cancel culture in the United States as some kind of Soviet style thing. I'm like, what do you think Venezuela is, you idiot? I mean, do you really think the people of Venezuela are free to complain about the government with no, you know, recourse? Come on. You can't be that dumb. The cognitive dissonance must be unbearable. Go ahead, Dave.
No, I was just saying, yes, he can be that stupid. There's no question about it.
Yeah, possibly. He could be that stupid. Totally that stupid. But it's remarkable.
As are many of his compatriots in Hollywood who have similar or the same point of view.
Now,
the Harry Belafonte's and the rest of them.
Yeah, I grew up in Florida, but I grew up in northern Florida. So growing up, I didn't have any Cuban friends. But then when I went to college, I had many Cuban friends. And I had the opportunity to talk to some of their grandparents who would come to visit. We would talk about how they got to the United States. Some of them came over as part of the Mariel boat lift with all these criminals. And to a person that escaped from Cuba, they all wanted the opportunity to return to their homeland in freedom. They all wanted the chance to at least go back there. Now, some of these people were old in 1987, and for sure they're dead. You know, they're not going to have that opportunity. But there are a lot of Cubans who still have families in Cuba. And what's interesting, I was listening to a bit of Jen Psaki's press conference this morning. I wanted to see if she's improved. And I have to say, she has improved dramatically. I want to give her, because I made fun of her at the beginning because it was so easy. So I want to say Jen Psaki's press conferences are better than they used to be. But somebody, one of the reporters said, you know, it's still illegal for Cubans to repatriate money back to their families in Cuba. When is the Biden administration going to change that? You guys, if people are allowed, and this is so, it's going to sound so heartless, but hear me out before I, don't say anything before I finish, okay? If you allow Cuban people to repatriate funds back to their families in Cuba, ultimately nothing ever changes. The Cubans don't rise up. They don't demand freedom. It's the same as making homelessness easy. The easier you make it to live under a totalitarian society, nothing ever changes. So I like I said, it sounds heartless because there are people in Cuba without enough food right now. There are people in Cuba that have just incredibly bad health care right now. But you have to hurt before you say enough is enough. And if Cuba was a free island, if Cuba had a free society and they embrace capitalism, they would instantly become a major tourist destination in a way that they can only, you know, begin to fathom right now. They're already a tourist destination again. But when you get off the tourist path, the people don't have any food because they're allotting all of their tomatoes, their green peppers, their onions. These are staples of the Cuban diet. They're giving them to all the hotels. So the people in Cuba are starving while the tourists are coming and having this really nifty impression of Havana as this neat place to go. I mean, I have friends that as soon as they opened up travel to Cuba, they were like, oh, I'm going to Cuba. I'm like, I'm not going to Cuba. Why don't you just write Raul Castro a check? Why don't you just put it in his big, fat, corrupt pocket? That's what you're doing when you travel to Cuba in its current situation. So I hope, I mean, I have been hopeful over the years in certain regimes stood up or people tried to stand up to him and it never works out. But I hope that the Cuban people have the opportunity to take back their country.
When I read about these demonstrations, it brought back the memory of that little Cuban boy, Evian Gonzalez.
Oh, yeah.
Who he was like 5 or 6 years old.
Six.
And he had relatives in Miami who were anti-Castro, and he was staying with them. He originally came here with his mother. And mother drowned on the way.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was taken in by relatives in Miami. However, his father, a devout communist in Cuba, came here and demanded he get his son and take him back to Cuba. And, you know, it was a terrible tragedy, but the courts had no choice. This was his father. And his father, and there's a famous photo of him being separated and taken by force. And it's heartbreaking. And today he's a devout communist, as they figured he would be.
And he's about to be a dad. I just Googled Elian Gonzalez today. And he said it doesn't say anything about whether he's a devout communist or if he just lives in Cuba.
No, he is. I read a few articles on him.
Many people. Here's the thing. That's what the Cuban government wants you to know about Elian Gonzalez. The Cuban government wants you, Dave, and me to think, oh, he's so happy he came back here. Do you really think in his darkest moments where he can't get things at the grocery store, he's not thinking, damn, I wish I'd stayed?
No, I don't. I don't, because he does get stuff at the grocery store. He's become a symbol for Cuba.
There you go.
And he gets everything first class, I am sure of that.
He's on the nice side of communism.
Exactly.
He's on the right side. Okay. Okay.
He's a walking advertisement for it.
Yeah. Keep an eye on this. This is really, really interesting. I hope that the Cuban people are successful. I don't know if they will be because they don't have any guns. They have no way to violently overthrow the government. They have no means other than rocks and whatever they can pick up and throw. And, you know, I hope that the Castros are old enough or dumb enough to just say, okay, fine, we're going to turn it over to you guys. And then it's not going to be smooth sailing because people who are not used to self-reliance struggle with freedom. That's why Afghanistan is widely expected to just fall back into the Taliban at this point. And by the way, you guys, I have a lot of compassion for the innocent people of Afghanistan who are going to suffer, but it was about damn time that we left Afghanistan. Because after 20 years, if you guys can't do it on your own, then we can't help you anymore. You know, 20 years is a generation. We have cycled a generation of human beings in Afghanistan under American leadership. And if they can't hold it together now, that's their responsibility, not our responsibility. And it's going to be sad and a lot of people are going to die. It's going to be really sad. But you cannot gift freedom. That's my biggest takeaway from the George W. Bush administration. I remember when he made that speech, it's a great speech, about people yearning to be free and us going in there as liberators and we're gonna gift them the freedom that they so desperately desire, but they didn't desire it enough to keep it, right? You have to earn it. It goes back to the whole conversation we just had in the last hour. If you don't earn it, it is not special and precious and not worthy of protection. It's one of the reasons why we have all of these people in the United States of America who are very willing to give up their freedoms for some sense of security. Just see how people adapted very quickly to being told to never leave their homes in the last year. How they adapted very quickly to being told to put a covering on their face wherever they went. People were very happy to be dictated to in this country. It's because they never had to fight for freedom. Freedom is easy. It's given. It's accepted. they don't have to live with the consequences of their own actions anymore. So why protect it? Why worry about it? Sure, if you tell me to stay home because I'm going to be safe if I stay home, there are too many people in this country that were willing to say, okay, I'm doing it. There are still people right now, you guys, arguing that we should all be required to wear masks again because of the Delta variant. Now, if you dig down on the Delta variant, it's contagious, but it's not any more deadly unless you're unvaccinated. If you're unvaccinated, you could still come through with flying colors, but you're more likely to end up in the hospital or die if you're not vaccinated. But everybody's had the opportunity to get vaccinated at this point. So if you choose not to and you get sick and you're in the hospital, sorry about your luck, but it's on you. But we have too many people that are willing to say, you know what? If this person promises me security, I'm willing to give up whatever's necessary to make myself feel secure. And that's a lie. You know, my sister is a perfect example. She did everything right when it came to COVID. She washed her hands religiously. She wiped down her packages religiously. She never left her house for one second without a mask. She did everything right and still got COVID. You know, it's like, so there's no 100% safe society that doesn't exist. And I'd much rather be free and have to face the challenges of a free society than be a kept animal in a cage with someone else making decisions about what I can have and what I cannot have.
You know, Mandy, you frequently talk about comparisons between us and Rome and the fall of Rome. And a lot of them are good points. There's one point, though, I don't think we ever make, and that's our history with freedom and a constitutional government. When people say, well, that sort of thing like Nazi Germany, it could happen here. Well, I don't think it could because of the tradition of 200 years of freedom. We have it so entrenched here. The only risk in that category is the risk of the change from attitudes from the older members of our society to those of the younger members. That was illustrated really graphically Friday when Mike Rosen revealed the results of a poll on are you proud to be an American?
Yeah.
And it showed in my demographic category, over 65, 86% are proud to be an American. In the youngest category, 18 to 24, 65% are not proud to be an American. And that's because of the indoctrination in our schools.
Yep.
And it's filtering down generation to generation. And it's a perfect graph from the oldest to the youngest, and it constantly goes downward on are you proud to be an American? And I think that's the danger, that our youth is not going to have the same love of freedom and constitutional republic that we have had. And that
I'm glad you brought that up, because one point that I'm trying to impart to parents right now, especially parents of kids going into middle school, going into high school, they believe that their teaching as a parent, that what they've tried to impart in their children is going to be enough so they can go to a school that has all of this stupid critical race theory, anti-American claptrap, and their children are going to be girded against it. But the reality is, your children are at school for 8 hours a day. They are doing exactly that most of the year. It is very, very difficult to fight against that and assume that your kid is going to be armed. And I'm telling you right now, if you don't want to have a kid who comes home from college after the first semester and says you're a racist, a homophobe, a xenophobe, a misogynist, or whatever ism they can throw at you, you need to get on top of this now and stop it. Because exactly what Dave's talking about right now, those kids are going to come home from college and never talk to their parents again. Right now, young people are cutting their parents out of their lives because of politics. That would have never happened in my life. The biggest argument I ever had with my father, the only massive blowing up, yelling at each other argument I ever had with my dad was about the Republican convention in 1996, right? Huge argument my dad and I had about Bob Dole's speech. I remember it like it was yesterday. That's how ingrained it is in my memory. But not one second did it ever occur to me to cut my father out of my life because of a political argument. And these kids are being steeped in an ideology that says, if you don't fully embrace what we're saying, you're a racist. You're a horrible person. You have such inherent racism, you can't even see it. And by the way, if you say you're not a racist, that just proves you're a racist, because everyone's racist. I mean, it is built to destroy everything that this country was founded on, and they are succeeding. And I'm not sure we can be pulled back from the edge. I'd love to believe that we're special enough, but I don't think we are.
And it starts way, way, way before college. That first time when your kid comes home and said, Dad, why are you destroying the environment by your behavior?
Exactly.
I mean, that's a clue. You better find out what's going on in your school.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly that thing right there. And that's what's happening. So it's not just about destroying society. It's about destroying families, because families are the cornerstone of society.
And it puts parents in an impossible situation, because you want your kids to respect their teachers and what they're telling them. However, there comes a point where that is no longer viable as a strategy, and you're going to have to say, your teacher is wrong. You're being taught the wrong things, and here is the alternative. And many, many people believe against what your teacher is teaching you. You have to become an activist in your own home when your kid comes home from school and tells you stuff.
You know, somebody asked me not too long ago, they said, well, would you have the Q go into school and raise hell? And I said, no, because she's in middle school. But we are having conversations with her now about things that her teachers are going to teach her. And the thing I say is, look, if you hear something that goes up against what you know Daddy and I believe, come to us. We'll have a conversation about it. We'll tell you why we believe what we believe, and I'd like to know what's going on, because frankly, when I was a kid, Chuck and I talked about this years ago, I could not tell you the political persuasion of one teacher that I had. Honestly. And I had political science classes in high school. No clue the political persuasion of any of those people. That's how it should be. And I told Q, if you ever get into a politics conversation, I want you to tell me, because that has no place in a classroom where a teacher is trying to get you to believe what they believe, even if it is contrary to what Daddy and I are trying to teach you because of our belief system. So we're having these conversations now. I'm not going to wait until it happens later. But people need to realize that the long-term ramifications are far more serious for your family structure than they are anything else. It's not just about your kid, thinking they know everything. It's about them never talking to you again. That's where we are in society, and that's what we're fighting against. So remember that. When we get
parents,
back...
Parents don't have the luxury they had when I was a kid to ignore what their kids are doing in school, and everything turns out fine. We don't have that luxury any longer.
In the next segment, I'm going to tell you how it's going to get harder to talk about your car's extended warranty. We got two planets almost colliding tonight. Not really, but you know, it's dramatic. And now I'm a horrible person, Susan, because I flew to Wisconsin to visit my friend who has cancer.
What? That's like the
according
nicest,
to this story.
This is the nicest thing you could do. I mean,
You know what, Susan? Here's the thing.
Pictures posted. It looks like you're having so much fun.
Oh, we had the best time ever. And you know what? Our friend is doing very well. I should say that. But Chuck and I have now lost enough friends from cancer where it was like, hey, I've got cancer. And we were like, oh, we should go see them eventually. And guess what?
Yeah, eventually.
Time runs out. Mm-hmm. So now when somebody says, we have cancer, we're going to show up on your doorstep, whether you like it or not. It's just how it's going to go.
That's the why. That's why you're my friend.
Yep.
Because we've got that going on.
What's coming up in the news, sister?
That's what you do. Okay, so in Florida, they have found the body of a Colorado woman. I'm going to get to that story. The White House standing with the people of Cuba. You're going to hear from the Secretary of State. And how much money do you need to own a home in Denver? How much of your income? I'll tell you at 2:30 on KOA News Radio, 850 AM and 94.1 FM.
All right, let me grab Al has been hanging on the phone. He wants to talk about Cuba. Hello, Al, what's on your mind?
Cuba Libre. Yes, I say to as an ex-Cuban, let him eat cake. That's what I say to them now. They've taken about 50 years to figure out what's going on. And when you're that dumb, you deserve to get what you're going to get. And this is
well, Al, you don't have a lot of compassion for your fellow people there.
None. I'm over and done with. I have no desire to go back there. None whatsoever. If I were to go there and I can do what I want, I go there to kill some people over 60 years of age. I kill them all. That will be it. That's my love for the people there now. And I do have family there, and I do stay in touch when I hear about it. And they have nothing.
Al, let me ask you a question. When did you come to the United States?
1958.
Oh, wow. So you came early.
Yeah, I was in college here.
Wow. Oh, that worked out well for you.
Well, yes, it did. And then my family, from my mother's side, everybody got out after they took everything away. They robbed everything they had. They all came to this country and did very well. Thank you.
Some of my most successful friends are my Cuban friends whose parents came over and instilled in them the value of the importance of freedom. And it sounds like you have that. Let me ask you this. So you have family there now. Have you talked to them in the last couple of days as all of this is unfolding?
No, I don't stay in touch like that. About 3 or 4 years ago, I had a third cousin that came over, crossed the border. They got him in the country. They give him a pass, so he got a green card and all that. And he was about 22, 23 at that time, him and the wife. Both of them came over. And I talked to him for several hours. I never met him before, but I knew of him. He knew of me. And the ignorance is incredible. They know nothing, but I mean nothing, about history 1960 and back. All they know is that the Yankees went there and they were oppressing everybody, period. So I brought them back to up to date. What life is really what it was before he was born. And what it is now. And he's in Florida now. They moved to Florida and they're doing fine.
But let me ask you this, Al. Can you blame him when he lived in a society where he didn't have access to any of that history and it was hidden from him?
I blame the older people. The people in their 60s and 70s. Those are the commies there. Those are the ones that need to have their heads chopped.
Oh. Well, Al, I'm guessing, are you hopeful now that what's happening is going to lead to something significant, or do you think it's going to be smushed down and everyone is going to stop?
No, they'll go there and beat the heck out of them, throw a bunch of them in jail, and a bunch of them will disappear and you'll never hear from them again. That's how they do it. There's not a problem there. They take care of that.
Wow. Well, Al, if you hear from any of your relatives, I would love for you to call and give me an update and tell me what
a good column I read today up here in the Wall Street Journal.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lady that writes a column here most of the time or almost every week, Mary Anastasia O'Grady.
Mm-hmm.
She wrote a whole column behind the Cuba COVID uprising just before what happened yesterday in Cuba. She wrote this, and it is really a good one. It tells you about medicine, the doctors, the nurses, what is going on in the island, the whole bit. This gal really knows what she's talking about.
Well, I'll seek out that column, and I'd love to hear Michael Moore's version of this, because he, of course, made a movie named Sicko, where he held up the Cuban socialized medicine system as kind of this shining beacon, and a lot of these protests, most of them, are about the collapse of the hospital system.
Yeah, it totally collapsed. I had an uncle there, and his daughter, my cousin, first cousin, she's in Atlanta now with her kids. They got out. Her father, she refused to leave Cuba. She could, because her brother is a doctor right here in Florida, and she refused to leave until her father passed away. He was 99 years old, and when she took him to the hospital, they didn't have a mattress there. So she called the nurse. She was there for a girlfriend of hers, a neighbor, and asked for a mattress, a better bed. And the nurse said, go to any room that's empty and grab whatever you can. Whatever you want, bring it here, and that's his mattress. And that's how they ran the whole hospital. And that was just the beginning of it. He took him home, said, I can do better at home.
Yeah, exactly. At what point is it just not worth it to go and subject yourself to that kind of, you know, idiocy?
Oh, yeah. You listen to them and they got horror stories about the things that's going on. But what the heck, you know, they're bad there and Syria's worse and the other place is worse. And the young people here that keep on voting for this leftist socialist Democrats, they're going to get what they deserve 1 year. And it's not going to take very long. The problem is the people like us, we're going to pay the price too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right, Al. Exactly right. I appreciate the phone call and the insight. And like I said, if you talk to any of your family in Cuba, I'd love to hear what they're dealing with right now, because I would imagine that it is pretty, you know, it's an interesting time to be alive in Cuba, I would guess, right now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Better time. It's better to be out of there.
Yeah, exactly. Al, I appreciate the phone call very, very much, sir. Call back anytime. And yeah, so that's happening in the old Cuba there. A couple things. I am a horrible person, according to a liberal columnist who makes the case that if you travel by air, it should come with some measure of social opprobrium, because I am killing the planet via air travel. This guy also makes the case, and dang it, the link I put in is bad. I'll fix that. He also makes the case that cruise ships should be banned because they use so much fuel, which is true. But if you're going to do that, then don't you have to ban any kind of cross-Atlantic or cross-Pacific shipping container ship? Because those things emit a gazillion tons of carbon waste. But nobody complains about getting their iPhone, do they? Yeah, Dave? Oh, your mic's not on. Dave is... There we go.
Yeah, my mic is on.
Oh, sorry, go ahead. No, I couldn't hear you, but now I can.
Okay. And now I forgot what I was going to say.
That's okay. Talking about me being a horrible person again. You know, same old, horrible person. This is an interesting text message that says, hey, Wendy, and then he apologized. Hey, Mandy, how come the United States is dragging its feet on giving additional COVID-19 shots to the immunocompromised? France is doing it, and now I see Israel is doing it. 10 million people in the United States are immunocompromised, and it's like being unvaccinated. Let me just say this. If you're immunocompromised and want a booster shot, go find one. You know, go find one. Don't wait for someone to say that it's okay. You can find a place to get one. I guarantee it. Go to your doctor's office. Don't wait for the government to tell you, because that's just not going to help. Someone said, I beat cancer in 2016, but you can still come visit. That's nice. That's nice. Somebody else just asked, Mandy, maybe a little bit off topic, but I'm curious to how your friend is doing overseas. I am recording an interview with Michelle this week. We were supposed to do it a couple weeks ago, but she is back at work and super busy and doing incredibly well. But we will get her on the show this week. We're going to record this week and make that happen. Let's see. I'm a horrible person. What was the other thing that I wanted to do? Oh, this is a really important story that I need you all to clearly understand as we begin to send our kids back to school. A child's chances of surviving a COVID-19 infection is 99.995%. And in that 0.005%, you find children with significant underlying health issues. And I am not belittling or demeaning any death of a child of COVID-19, but if you have a healthy child, or you even have a child with asthma or some other condition, those kids are surviving this just fine. Just fine. So we don't need to worry about our children dying of COVID, and we don't need to be freaking out and getting five-year-olds vaccinated. I just don't think that's necessary.
And the teachers' union still wants kids to be wearing masks to
and
protect them.
And fully vaccinated.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. Correct me if I'm wrong. The whole mask thing from the very beginning said masks are not to protect you. It's to protect those around you. Mm-hmm. So that you won't give it to them. It really does, unless it's one of those 95 masks, it's not going to protect you. So you're just going to suffocate these kids for no reason. You're not going to be protected. They're going to be protected, and they don't need protection from you.
Correct. Correct. And
no sense. None of it.
But Dave, you're expecting the teachers union to be consistent and do something that benefits children, which we all know is a lie. Crazy. Stupid.
Teachers union and every union is designed to protect the weakest member of their union from being fired. End of story, pretty much.
Not children.
And not to advance the education of children. If that happens, great, bonus. But that is not the primary mission of the teachers union.
The CDC has now put out new recommendations about allowing children to return to school. All they have to do is prove they're fully vaccinated against COVID, or they can just wear a mask and stay 3 feet apart from their friends. My kid's not going back to school in a mask. I'll tell you that right now. It's not happening. I will homeschool her this year if I have to. Probably much to her chagrin, but I'm simply not going to participate in this. It's not based in science. It's just not.
I'll tell you that issue after issue that the teachers union is jumping on in the last few months is a loser.
Correct.
I mean, the critical race theory, the mask issue, all of it is telling parents and the general populace what teachers unions are all about.
Yep.
It appears. Just
go ahead, Kuv.
I don't know how old your child is, but it appears, just in looking what the schools, at least in Douglas County, are going to do, anybody who's vaccinated that is 12 and above aren't going to have to wear them. All those kids who are 12 and under are going to have to wear them regardless, because there's obviously no vaccination for those kids.
That's crap. When did that come out in Douglas County?
It hasn't come out. That's just been some of the rumors that are floating around out there, because Douglas County, I don't think any school district has actually come out with their policy, despite the fact that school starts August, 8th?
Yeah.
9th?
Wait, you know what? It snuck up on them, Coover. Come on. They had no idea that they were going to be dealing with this summer. Are you nuts? How can you expect them to respond quickly to something that Oh, wait, my bad. It's been around over a year. Sorry. What was I thinking? That they would have a plan. Yeah, they would have a... Oh, gosh, I didn't see what time it was. Now it's time for the most exciting segment on the radio of its kind in the world of the day. Sorry, caught you off guard there. Poof. I'll look into the Douglas County thing. Actually, we'll look into all of the school districts and find out what's going on. All right, what's our word of the day, please, Dave?
Okay, word of the day is a noun.
A noun.
It's from the French.
Ooh.
And it is ingenue.
Ingenue means like a... I know what it means. Ingenue is kind of a young, beautiful woman, kind of a, you know, the woman everyone wants. An ingenue.
No, wrong.
No? Yeah, Coover?
I'll give you partial credit, but no.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Dragon's here, by the way, as well.
Oh, hey, Dragon.
Isn't that Dragon. Dip that you put in the roast beef sandwiches, the au jus?
No, that's au jus.
Yeah.
That's with juice, au jus. Au jus.
Never mind.
All right, fine then.
No, ingenue is an innocent or naive young woman.
Oh.
Beautiful or ugly or in between.
Oh, okay.
Or a role in a play or movie portraying a naive young female character.
There you go. Who is often referred to?
She gets nothing but ingenue roles.
Okay. Who is often referred to as the father of American football? I think I know this, but I'm not positive. Anybody want to take a guess before I guess? Anyone? You guys know this.
What, the Packers head coach Lombardi?
Lombardi, right?
No, yeah, no. No. Goes way before that.
Newt Rockne.
No. Walter Camp. Correct! I don't know why I know this. Walter Camp in the 1870s. Camp was a Yale University student. He proposed a set of rules for football that helped regularize and formalize the sport. So he was the first guy to kind of say, okay, here's the deal. You know, and create
Very
the structure.
Very impressive,
that
Mandy.
I have no idea why I know that, but yet it existed in my brain. There you go. All right, what's our Jeopardy category?
Category for today.
Okay.
It's an ethnic thing.
Ooh.
You have to give the nationality most associated with each clue I'm going to give you.
Okay.
The nationality, that's what you're shooting for.
Okay.
Here we go. Puzzle and checkers.
Puzzle and checkers.
What?
Wow.
Huh?
Where was that? You were trying to say like where that was created?
Mandy? What is the United States?
Wrong.
Dang it.
You didn't get it, but you will when I give you the answer.
Okay.
Anyone else know?
What
I don't really recommend
it.
No, I need to know how this works first.
Okay, it works because the answer is, what is Chinese? Chinese checkers. The nationality of the games that I describe. Okay.
Here we go. Here's
the next one.
Okay.
Roulette and Wolfhound.
Kuv.
Manny.
Kuv. Russian.
Correct.
What is Russian roulette?
Yeah.
Oh. And Russian Wolfhound.
I like it. Okay, I get it now.
Okay, next one. Rhapsodies and Goulash.
Manny. What is hungry? My people. Yeah. I'm back to zero.
Okay, next one. Lenin and Republican Army.
Mandy, what is Ireland?
Mandy.
What is Ireland?
I'll give it to you.
Yeah, what is Irish?
What is Irish?
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. I don't know if I should have, but I did. Okay. And finally, towel and taffy.
Mandy.
Yes.
What is Turkish?
Correct.
Yes!
You are the winner.
Started in a deficit, dang. Came back for the big win. I like that category. That was kind of cool.
It is.
I like that a lot.
Once you understand it.
Big Al and JoJo are right now right across the street from Coors Field getting ready to lead up to the coverage of the Home Run Derby. Stop down there and say hi to them, but we'll make way so they can take over the station. We'll be back tomorrow. Keep it right here on KOA News Radio.